Hey Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 5, Chapter 3, Rishabhdev's appearance in the womb of Meru Devi, the wife of King Nabi. In this chapter, the spotless character of King Nabi, the oldest son of Agnidra, is described. Wanting to have sons, Maharaj Nabi underwent severe austerities and penances. He performed many sacrifices along with his wife and worshipped Lord Vishnu, master of all sacrifices. Being very kind to his devotees, the Supreme Personality of Godhead was very pleased with the austerities of Maharaj Nabi. He personally appeared before the king in his four-handed feature, and the priests who were performing the sacrifices began to offer their prayers unto him. They prayed for a son like the Lord, and Lord Vishnu agreed to take birth in the womb of Meru Devi, the wife of King Nabi, and incarnate as King Rishabhdev. Text 1. I just read the prose. Nabir apatya kamo prajaya merudevaya bhagavantam jagapurusham avahitatma yayata. I don't think we have to read the word for word. I'll just read the translation. Sukadeva Goswami continued to speak. Maharaj Nabi, the son of Agnidra, wished to have sons, and therefore he attentively began to offer prayers and worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, the master and enjoyer of all sacrifices. Maharaj Nabi's wife, Meru Devi, who had not given birth to any children at that time, also worshipped Lord Vishnu along with her husband. Text 2. In the performance of a sacrifice, there are seven transcendental means to obtain the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. 1. By sacrificing valuable things or edibles. 2. By acting in terms of place. 3. By acting in terms of time. 4. By offering hymns. 5. By going through the priest. 6. By offering gifts to the priest. And 7. By observing the regular principles. However, one cannot always obtain the Supreme Lord through this paraphernalia. Nonetheless, the Lord is affectionate to his devotee. Therefore, when Maharaj Nabi, who is a devotee, worshipped and offered prayers to the Lord with great faith and devotion, and with a pure, uncontaminated mind, superficially performing some jaga in the line of pravargya, the kind Supreme Personality of Godhead, due to his affection for his devotees, appeared before King Nabi in his unconquerable and captivating form with four hands. In this way, to fulfill the desire of his devotee, the Supreme Personality of Godhead manifested himself in his beautiful body before his devotee. This body pleases the mind and the eyes of the devotees. Purport. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is clearly said, Bhaktimam abhijananti yavam yaschasmi tatvataha tatomam tatvato gyatva vishute tad anantaram. One can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead as he is only by devotional service. When one is in full consciousness of the Supreme Lord by such devotion, he can enter into the kingdom of God. Bhagavad Gita 18:55. One can understand and see the Supreme Personality of Godhead through the process of devotional service and not in any other way. Although Maharaj Nabi performed prescribed duties and sacrifices, it should still be considered that the Lord appeared before him not due to his sacrifices, but because of his devotional service. It was for this reason that the Lord agreed to appear before him in his beautiful bodily features. As stated in the Brahma Samhita, 5:30, the Supreme Lord in his original nature is very beautiful. Venam kvanantam aravinda dalaya daksham. Bahavatam Sam Asitam Buddhasundaranga. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, although blackish, is very, very beautiful. Mom Vishnu Vraya Krishna Pristai Bhutte Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swamita Namane Namaste Sarasvatundeve Gauravani Vacharane Nirvishesha Srinivadi Paskatyade Satarane. Here mentions the word devotional service as opposed to just ordinary service, because Maharaj Nabi, he is offering a sacrifice, so that is a kind of service to the Supreme Lord. But the question is, what is devotional service? As long as one is in the bodily concept of life, then our service cannot actually be devotional. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma Nishoshiti Nakangshiti Samaksarveshu Bhuteshu Madhvaktim Lavate Param. That when we come to the platform of Brahma Bhuta, when we realize that we're not the body, not just theoretically, but actually by practical experience, then we actually become Prasanatma. We become joyful. Not exactly fully joyful, but we become free from all kinds of fear, especially. There are five kleshas in the material world, beginning with ignorance, not knowing who we are, and especially not knowing that we're eternal, and that's avidya, ignorance. Of course, there's more knowledge. There's knowledge of the Supreme Lord. There's knowledge of the self. But we don't even know who we are. We don't even know, even if we don't know our identity, thus far we have not even realized that we're not the body. Therefore, anyone who hasn't realized that they're not their body has to be in ignorance. What to speak of any higher knowledge, such as who we actually are and who the Supreme Lord is. And because we're in ignorance, therefore we're covered by false ego. Not only we don't know who we are, we don't know we're eternal, but we think we're someone that we're not. It's bad enough to not know who you are, but it's even worse to think you're someone that you're not. Therefore, we can expect that if we just theoretically give up our false ego and not take our false ego so seriously, that I'm actually so-and-so, living in such-and-such place, such-and-such time, I have so many things, I know so, this and that. If we just give up this false ego, then there's some possibility of accepting our fact that we're actually eternal, and therefore we can become free from all kinds of problems. Namely, shoshiti and kangshiti. This body comes equipped with all kinds of desires. And there is no limit to them. One can spend the whole life fulfilling desires and spend many, many, all the lives subsequently to this life just fulfilling desires. And as we try and fulfill desires, we'll also develop aversions to things. So we'll like certain things and we'll hate other things and spend our whole life trying to get things for our enjoyment and trying to avoid things that cause us pain. Or unpleasant to us. And always being absorbed in fear of what the future is. Good for the astrologers and palm readers, but not very good for us. Because as long as we think that our destiny is the same destiny as this body, we're going to become fearful. Because no matter how hard we try, no matter how many exercises we take, no matter how many pills, how many vitamins we take, we die anyhow. The homeless die, and the people living in the palatial buildings, they all die equally. It's not that because I'm living in a palace, the Amadutas won't be able to get in. They only pick off the old people in the street, but not the people in the palaces. So, with this in mind, at least, shoshati kangshati samak sarveshu bhuteshu, and as long as we're in the bodily concept of life, we'll have so many people we identify ourselves as our friends, and so many people we think are our enemies. A few years ago, the Russians were Americans' big enemy. Then they became friendly. Now it's never, every day it changes according to the whims of the politicians and the whims of the mass media. They tell people who your friends and enemies are. In order to enter into actual devotion, these are the preliminary qualifications. Therefore, Krishna says, there are four kinds of pious people who approach him. Those who are in distress, those who are in wanting some comfort, those who want some knowledge of how to live better in the material world, and those who want to get out of the material world. As long as we're in the bodily concept of life, we automatically have these ideas in mind, because that's what the bodily concept of life means. Either we're suffering, or we're trying to become comfortable, or we're trying to figure out how to better control the material world, or we're trying to get out of the material world. That is the bodily concept of life. Therefore, it should be understood that anyone who's not, at least on the platform of Nishta, who can actually think about Krishna, because after all, we are the Krishna consciousness movement, which means that we're supposed to be conscious of Krishna. Not only during class sometimes, or when we come into the temple, we're supposed to be always conscious of Krishna. There's no some place called the temple where you're supposed to become conscious of Krishna, and outside the temple, well, there's so many things to be aware of. Reality is outside. Here we just think about Krishna a little bit, and outside we do our thing. Become conscious of Krishna means rasoham apsnukontaya pravasi shasi surya. The Krishna is everywhere. He's the sunlight, he's the taste in water, he's the ability that everyone has. Krishna is everything. Therefore, in one sense, it should not be hard to become conscious of Krishna. The problem is, because we want to compete against Krishna, therefore it's very hard to be very happy the fact that he's around. If your competitor suddenly disappears, life is good. But if your competitor is everywhere, it's not very pleasant. And since we've come to the material world to become the proprietors and to think ourselves to be the owners of so many different things, as long as we have that mentality, then somehow or another it's very difficult to think of our competitor. And if we do, it's not always so favorable. Why does Krishna have to have everything? Why can't he be a little generous and give something to me? Why do I always have to think everything is his? I can't have anything. In other words, unless one becomes positively enthusiastic to the fact that Krishna is the owner of everything, then one has to be in the mode of ignorance. Because the fact is, he is the owner of everything. So if we can't accept the fact that he is the owner of everything, if we walk out and we look at things and we think, well, that's what I wanted. That will make me happy. She will make me happy. He will make me happy. The pet dog will make me happy. Something will make me happy. If I get a better house, a better car, a better wife, a better husband, better salary, better this or that, then that way a better position, then I'll become happy that way. Not thinking that everything is actually Krishna's, and that will make me happy is whatever Krishna gives me, then I'll use it for him. So that's getting out of the mode of ignorance. And the next thing is, rather than use it for him so that I can become happy, use it to him because my happiness depends upon his happiness. Not that somehow or another he happens to be God. He was born like that, although it may not be fair. But what can I do? I got to accept it because I have no choice. Therefore, I'll have to do everything for him because otherwise some lightning bolt may hit me because he's quite powerful. So I have to do it for him. I have no other choice. No one should actually become enthusiastic that it's good that Krishna is, if I try to please Krishna and he becomes pleased, that's much greater than anything I can do to please myself. Just as we're very much caught up in trying to please this body as if it was Krishna, so we try to please the real Krishna, then we'll actually become pleased. I mean, how much we try to please this artificial identity that we have, this artificial deity called our material body, we never become pleased. We simply get more and more orders and instructions from the body and the mind, endlessly, perpetually, forever. But as soon as we resume our natural nature of trying to please Krishna, then at once Krishna reciprocates, and that reciprocation is the nature of enlightenment and happiness, transcendental pleasure, which Maharaj Shabdev says goes on forever. Then we shouldn't think that I'm, by my mercy, it's all happening, that I've made myself so exalted that even Krishna has to come and reciprocate with me. No, one should think that it is by the mercy of Krishna and his devotees that I've been given this chance to become an instrument for Krishna. And as long as I remain their servant, then my life has some meaning and is progressive. So to develop the attitude towards the devotees and towards Krishna, those who are in representatives of Krishna, then one can actually make his life devotional. Other than that, we may follow mechanically some instructions. We may do sacrifices or give in charity or perform some austerity. But if it's Krishna is not there, although we may be on the safe side in the material world coming to the mode of goodness, but that mode of goodness is not ultimately very helpful to achieving our actual goal of life, which is to get out of material consciousness and wake up again. To have a dream in the mode of goodness is still a dream. May not be a nightmare as much, but it's still a dream. And as one dream goes to the next, a nightmare may appear. We may be dreaming that we're on a nice lake with swans and nice lotus flowers, and then out pops a dragon out of the lake. So we can't be so sure what's next after in our dream. If we want to get out of the fearful state of life, one has to become conscious of Krishna. Which basically means, Krishna says, bhaktimam abhijananti. So first of all, we have to become conscious of Krishna, and rather than worrying about very detailed understandings about Krishna, first we just have to accept the fact that everything belongs to Krishna. We can see if we're actually making progress, not so much whether even if I'm remembering Krishna, of course that is progress, but whether I'm actually utilizing everything in his service. If I have a little set aside for me, or a lot set aside for me, and a little for Krishna, just to keep Krishna's mercy flowing, so I can accumulate more and more things in my service, so that will not be very progressive. But on the other hand, if we try to utilize everything in Krishna's service, that is the most positive way to understanding Krishna. That is the most direct way of accepting that he is the proprietor. And of course, Krishna has his desire. It's not that Krishna thinks, well, whatever you do, go ahead as long as it's for me. No, Krishna speaks Bhagavad Gita in order to give us some understanding of what he actually wants. Of course, what he wants is that he wants us to awaken people to become Krishna conscious. He wants us to hear about him, chant about him, and ultimately be aware of the fact that he is the ultimate benefactor and well-wisher of all living entities. That without knowing Krishna, that no one can know what their real interest is. Therefore, if we want to be a friend to others, then we have to become an instrument for Krishna and help them become Krishna conscious. Then we'll know Krishna. Then Krishna will reveal himself, and the result will be when we become aware of Krishna, then real bhakti can be there. Of course, bhakti means, first of all, to do what we want, what Krishna wants us to do, to please Him. And then when we become aware of Him, then that bhakti will increase, because we'll see that He's actually, not only He's the proprietor, He's the enjoyer, but He's the nicest person at the same time. That is a good thing. He is the controller, because if we were the controller, things wouldn't turn out as well as if He was the controller. And it's a good thing He's the enjoyer. He knows how to enjoy much better than we can. So we try to enjoy ourselves, our enjoyment will be very minuscule. But if we dovetail our enjoyment with Krishna, then our enjoyment will increase. Just like if you play baseball, or you, because we don't recommend these things, but say you were playing baseball by yourself, it would, there may be some enjoyment, but if you play with a team, and everyone in the team cooperates very nicely, then there's a lot more enjoyment. So trying to enjoy ourselves is not so enjoyable. Trying to enjoy a team to satisfy Krishna, the supreme enjoyable, that's very much enjoyable. He's the most enjoyable. So here it describes how nice Krishna is. He's not... It says he's very beautiful. He's a good musician. He has a lot of qualifications. He made an album. Everyone wants to make an album to become famous, but he has the most followers. He's the biggest star since eternally as a musician. No one is able to compete with his flute playing, because here they haven't made so many albums of Krishna's flute playing. But in the spiritual world, that's all. People don't even have to make albums. That's all they think about all day. So we can't compete with Krishna's beauty, with His musical ability, with everything about Him. And we can understand these things simply by hearing about Him. Krishna is so kind. As Maharaj Nabi saw Krishna so many years ago, we can also perceive Krishna and become aware of Him just by hearing about Him through the Bhagavatam. And especially if we follow that instructions and become devotional in our lives, utilize whatever assets Krishna has already given us, then the hearing will become more and more pleasant. Prabhupada said, if you're a Brahmin, then try to act like a Brahmin. Try to convince people that Krishna is God. Don't try to decry Him and claim that you're God. If you're a Kshatriya, then try to ministrate in such a way the Krishna consciousness movement can be spread. If you're a Vaishya, then utilize your resources in the service of Krishna. And if you're a Sudra, try and become a Vaishya, at least. Try to serve the other higher classes. In any case, Prabhupada writes, the best thing after all is to hear about Krishna, to develop a taste for hearing about Krishna. But in the absence of these things, then we should try to serve Krishna with our paraphernalia that we may identify ourselves with. But the best thing, after all, is to develop a taste for hearing and chanting. So we shouldn't miss out on that. It's not that we should work, 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 and forget about becoming conscious of Krishna. We should work and at the same time try to become aware of Krishna in our everyday lives. And that's most important, can be achieved by hearing about Krishna regularly. And then try to put it into practice. Then we'll be able to realize Krishna in every aspect of our lives. So, stop there. Any questions? Yes.
I just want to make sure I understood. Thank you for having this class. I want to make sure I understood a point you were making in the earlier part of your class correctly. You're saying that unless one comes to the Brahma Buddha platform, then there's no question of being able to be engaged in devotional service, that one has to first come to that platform first?
Yes.
Okay. So then, you know, in that description of the process of devotional service that's given by Rupa Goswami in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, where he talks about, you know, the different stages going from Shraddha to Prem.
Right.
So one has to complete the previous stage before he can move on to the next stage? In other words, one has to complete, say, like a Narth and a Riddhi before he can go on to Nishta
go on means we may experience at times the higher stages, but we're generally considered to be on a certain stage according to our normal everyday consciousness that we're in. I may get glimpses of the higher stages by Krishna's mercy, but that doesn't mean that simply because I got a glimpse of the stage, therefore I'm on that stage. You may see a movie of India, and you may, you know, remember something about India, but that doesn't mean you're in India. You have to go to India to be in India. But you become a little aware of India by watching some movie about it.
So it's actually possible to experience some higher stage, even though one that's not really...
Yeah, we have to experience higher taste. Otherwise, why would we want to go on to that higher stage? Therefore, it says, by chanting the holy name, by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, worshipping the deity, serving the devotees, and living in a holy place, that if one does it sincerely, one of those five potent activities, then one can experience bhava, some transcendental ecstasy. So without experiencing higher taste, then what's our impetus? I mean, there is an impetus, birth, death, old age, and disease, but we need some positive impetus also, some higher taste. So that's why we practice sadhana bhakti. The purpose of sadhana bhakti is to achieve bhava. So when we practice sincerely our sadhana bhakti, then we'll remember Krishna, and then in his association we'll experience some pleasure, some transcendental ecstasy. That will inspire us to practice more. And when we're spontaneously attracted, then we will be practicing all the time. But now we're trying to kickstart. We kickstart, we get into full gear. We're in devotional service for a little while. We're actually doing things more devotionally. And then we get distracted. And then we have to kickstart again. So therefore, knowing that, we have a regular program every day. And eventually we won't have to kickstart. We'll just be flying. Yes.
Maharaj, in the verse in the text of number 2, it's described here how Maharaj Nimi was, Anabhi was a very great devotee, worshipped and offered prayers to the Lord with great faith and devotion and with a pure uncontaminated mind, superficially performed some yajna. So who was he trying to satisfy that he was doing this superficially?
Krishna.
Superficially?
Yeah. Karmanaiva hi sam siddhim astita janakadaya loka sangraham evapi sampashan kartu maharasi. Even kings like Janaka and others perform their prescribed duties just to set the example for others. Therefore, you following their footsteps, you should also do the same thing. So he wasn't into sacrifices. He was into pleasing Krishna. So it wasn't that he did the sacrifice carefully. But the objective, he wasn't so much concerned with the sacrifice, he was concerned with pleasing Krishna. So that's what superficially means. It may have appeared that he was fully dedicated to the sacrifice, but the sacrifice was, he could do anything that Krishna wanted him to do. Some people are so much into sacrifices, even if Krishna came and asked them not to do it, they'd still do it anyhow. Anything else? Yes.
What's going on with our false ego? What is the difference in the stage of Nishta, for example, and the stage of Bhava? What's going on?
What are you worried about Bhava for?
Or Rishi?
There is no false ego in practically speaking of Bhava. It's when we've actually realized who we are. Then
okay,
we have a real
Ruchi,
ego.
For example, and Nishta.
At the state of Nishta, the false ego is not there. I mean, it's still there, but we don't take it so seriously. We see ourselves as, you know, mostly as the watching how Krishna is doing everything and ourselves as the desirer. And we know at the state of Nishta, if I keep on desiring to please Krishna, then Krishna will keep on utilizing my body, the body that I'm in his service. And I won't become attacked by the modes of nature. So anicca means to remember Krishna, and when, as long as Krishna is there, then maya won't be there. But there are different degrees. The state of anicca, maya is not there in the sense that I, at least I know things much more clearly, but still it's still on the platform of theory more than full experience. Yes.
So, are we saying that when we talk about Bhava and the Brahma-Buddha platform, that the person that's on that platform, do they realize that? Are they like, if a person is on in Bhava or Prem or Brahma-Buddha platform, does that mean that they're, you know, you can go up to them and ask them? I mean, I'm just trying to understand the principle.
Yeah, of course.
You can go up to them and ask them, and they'll tell you, yeah, I'm on the Brahma-Buddha platform. No, I'm on the Prema. And, you know, such and such is on Bhava.
Yeah.
So that person knows that they're in that particular level.
Yeah, of course they do. Otherwise, what is the verse? Bhakti Parashanu Vyaktir Anyatra Trika Ekakala Prapanamas Nasya Yatashantosus Tushti Pushti Shudapayanugasam. So detachment from the material energy, awareness of Krishna, and growing how everyone and everything is related to Krishna, and growing love for Krishna follows simultaneously by performance of pure devotion. Just like when one eats a meal, satisfaction, growing alleviation of hunger, and growing strength happens simultaneously. So of course the devotee is one whose knowledge, he knows all those things. He's fully aware.
I'm just kind of like surprised that a devotee would even be, you know, thinking like that. In other words, that I'm on the Brahma-Buddha platform.
Of course he has to know that he's on the Brahma. If you're on the there, otherwise why do we have the books? They tell us if you're on the Brahma-Buddha platform,
when
this
you're
is the way
you
see
such.
Things. Naiva kinchit karomiti yukta magnite tattvavit. One who's tattvavit, he sees, oh, while speaking and sleeping, while opening and closing his eyes, he knows that only the material senses are engaged in their objects, and he's aloof from them.
Mm-hmm.
Of course he knows it. That's called knowledge. Otherwise he'd be in ignorance. He doesn't become puffed up thinking, I'm so great, therefore I'm on this platform. He knows it's by the mercy of my spiritual master and the devotees in Krishna. I've achieved this platform, not by my own power, but by their mercy. But he knows he's on the platform.
So then you're saying like the gopis then that were on the platform of Prema?
You know, yeah.
They knew that they were in that particular position?
Yeah, of course they did. And we know what position we're in. If we read the scriptures, we'll find out what position we're in. When we become fully Krishna conscious, we won't have to read the scriptures. We'll know who we actually are. The gopis, they all knew who they were. They all know Krishna. Therefore, they were perfectly enlightened. Right now, we don't know who we are, and we don't know Krishna. So we're in ignorance. So when we know Krishna, we know who we are. We're in full knowledge. Now you walk up to a gopi like Srimati Radharani, who are you? I don't know. I'm trying to figure it out. Are you sure?
Well, maybe not like that kind of confusion, but maybe more like, well, you know, I'm just aspiring to be a, you know.
Well, they feel like that, but that's part of love. That's one of the symptoms of love. They actually love Krishna. But it's not like, you know, Radharani Srimati Radharani has to chant her rounds every day. Because she just wants to develop some feeling. Her feelings are overwhelming. But due to her intense humility, also, she feels that she's just aspiring.
Well, that's my point, though. I mean, in other words, externally, okay, they may be acting or saying one particular thing. But internally, they're on a particular platform of Krishna consciousness, love of Godhead. And I guess what I'm trying to understand is that does a devotee on that platform, do they aspire more to be humble and that they're aspiring the level of bhava and prema? Or can they kind of like walk around and just think, yeah, I'm on bhava?
No, they don't. They're on bhava.
That was my point more.
Just like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, after he fainted, if you see that I'm exhibiting all these ecstasies, all these transformations, don't think that actually I love Krishna, because if I'm actually just pretending, because if I actually love Krishna, then I would have died long ago. But of course, it's not that Lord Chaitanya didn't know he was thinking about Krishna. Yes. He was completely in ecstasy. But he felt that he was actually, you know, due to the simultaneously inconceivable humility that comes when you find out how wonderful Krishna is and Krishna's devotees are, then one feels oneself insignificant.
Yeah, and that's probably what I was coming to, because Lord Chaitanya was saying that, you know, he's like Das Das Anudas. So he's thinking that that's what he thinks his position is.
That's because he sees how wonderful everyone is. Therefore, he becomes overwhelmed by love when he sees everyone. So that's the perfection. Not that now I'm on Baba. You people are all on, you know, who knows where you guys are at. I feel sorry for it. Yeah. No, he knows he's in Baba, but he thinks everyone is higher than he is. Yes.
Hi, Omar. Thank you for a very nice class. Nice explanations. We have an immediate example of that in Srila Prabhupada. Obviously, he knew where he was in relation to the devotional ladder, if you would. He knew his position, but it didn't prevent him from being humble and tolerant and like that. So it's not that one is exclusive of the other. It's not that if I have knowledge that I can teach others, that means I'm being puffed up. No. Prabhupada knew his position. He knew everything. He knew his position on the devotion ladder, the highest rung. But he was still humble, tolerant, and all the above. So it's not exclusive that if I have knowledge that I can teach others, that means I'm being puffed up and I'm presenting myself as being a big this and a big no. Prabhupada knew his position. He knew exactly. He knows Krishna. He has Krishna. Only one who has Krishna can give Krishna. But at the same time, they feel lower than the lowest. That is why it's so hard to understand who is a pure devotee.
Well, that's what you're trying to teach. So, unless one is on that platform, how can he teach? Because that's what one is trying to teach. Yes. So it's not that if I become very exalted and very advanced, then I'll become puffed up. No, if I'm very exalted and advanced, then I'll become very humble, because that's what exalted and advanced means.
Maharaj, you said that remembrance of Krishna is definitely progress, advancement. But you also said that somebody who utilizes knowledge about Krishna, utilizing devotional service, is more advanced. So I can ask, who is more advanced? Somebody who have perfect remembrance of Krishna. He know Prabhupada books very well, but he didn't utilize all this knowledge. Whereas somebody who don't have so much knowledge, but try to utilize this knowledge, who is more advanced?
Person who utilizes the knowledge, of course. Ram Das, when he was accompanying Gopal Raghunath Bhat to Jagannath Puri, Ram Das is constantly chanting the name of Ram and serving Gopal Raghunath Bhat just like a menial servant. But when they arrived at Jagannath Puri, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu warmly greeted Raghunath Bhat and became a confidential associate of Lord Chaitanya. On the other hand, Ram Das, when he finally met Lord Chaitanya completely neglected him. Because although he was always chanting the name of Ram 24 hours a day, he thought he himself was Ram. Yes.
Then that means that we should be very careful not to allow people to put us on the platform we're not on. You know, a lot of people may run around and just say that you're like a pure devotee of the Lord. You may get to believe that after a while. You know, because somebody's going to say, you're like Prem or you're Bhav. And it sounds to me like a little bit like the king, you know, came out with no clothes on. But as he was doing the parade, everybody was saying, oh, what a wonderful garment the king is wearing. He looks so gorgeous. Look at him. But he's totally stark naked. And so, but everybody's saying, you know, for fear that they don't want to tell him, you know, the truth, they say to that person, to king, well, gee, you look great. Look at your wonderful outfit. So we may want to be careful that we don't run around and start talking to everybody saying, Jai Prabhuji, it looks like you have prem, love of Godhead, and you're a pure devotee. And
people can say that, but who would take it serious?
Well, we might want to...
Just like people say, how you look good today. So I say, well, what do I look like? Maybe you can see what I look like, then you should tell. But, you know, this is, I mean, most of the devotees never take these things seriously. It's just joking around. People actually... Well, if someone says you're on the platform of prema, then they must be on the platform of prema too, otherwise how would they know? It's more like saying, hey, look at me, I'm on prema. Well, they were wrong. Well, they should go back and read the books more. Yeah. Well, maybe someone is on prema. I mean, after all, Prabhupada, for instance, we can understand he was on the platform of prema. Prabhupada says because he spread, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura said that someone who can actually make others into Vaishnavas, many, many people into Vaishnavas, they should be understood as Mahabhagavats. So by symptoms, we can. But then we have to see what the symptoms are. If there are a lot of symptoms, you know, Kanista symptoms or a lot of symptoms of a Madhyama or even, you know, Uttama, then we have to see what kind of symptoms a person has and judge accordingly. So therefore, it is true. We shouldn't just go around. It's just, for one thing, it's kind of a trick. You know, if you want to flatter people, if you want to get something from them, you just flatter them. Just like I mentioned that some devotee was on Sankirtan, you know, one of the techniques, you go up to someone and say, an old lady and her daughter, and you say, are you two sisters? Because the old lady usually has all the money. You stand a better chance of distributing the book. And she goes, oh, you're just trying to flatter me, but I'll give you a donation anyhow. So it may be a technique sometimes. You go up and you say how wonderful everyone is, but actually you're thinking how wonderful I am because I'm telling everyone how wonderful they are. How wonderful I am. But you may be misleading people also. Maybe you may not give people the proper discrimination. Prabhupada didn't always go around telling everyone, oh, you're so wonderful. You know, every time I see you, I become happy. Your effulgence is just warming me up and let me fall down at your feet. No, Prabhupada was able to properly take a position. He knew what his position was. Not only when he was the acharya, but before he was an acharya, when he'd just go around humbly and just sell, you know, his newspaper to people in tea stalls. He didn't go, hey, do you know who I am? Do you know who I'm going to be? You take this magazine. It's going to cost a lot. It'll be worth a lot in the future. No, Prabhupada always acted appropriately. But when he became the acharya, you know, he didn't go around flattering people. He told people what was necessary so they could make advancement. He said things appropriately. So we don't have that much time that we should waste, that we should flatter everyone. We also should try and act appropriately. Yes. Okay. That's it. Thank you very much. Grandharai Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande.
Yes, Krishna.